Hey, this is H1. We're going to be running it back with another episode talking about chess knowledge, chess wisdom, and chess understanding again. And today, I got a perfect guest, the chess nerd. If you haven't heard about him, he is on YouTube. He's on Twitch. He is on he's on Instagram, on pretty much every platform with short form content, getting millions of views. All right. So if you want to introduce yourself, you can.
Hey, everyone. My name is Zach, or the chess nerd, as most of you know. As Devon said, I'm on Instagram, TikTok, pretty much the works, YouTube, Twitch. I'm a chess content creator from Montreal, Canada. And yeah, I'm very excited to be here.
Montreal, Canada. Oh, snap. How was it learning how to play chess in Canada?
Just like learning how to play chess in anywhere in the U.S. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I learned it in French, actually.
Okay. Oh, you learned it in French. Okay.
Yeah. That's awesome. Everything when I was a childhood in chess clubs, all the terms, like skewer, let's say, I learned in French, enfilade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I had to learn it all back again.
So I asked that question because when I was learning how to play chess in Kansas City, it's different learning chess away from like the main capitals of chess. So for example, in New York, you can like go down a street and then see people playing chess. In St. Louis, everybody's playing chess in that neighborhood. In Kansas City, where I was learning how to play chess, it was nobody. And I was playing chess against like homeless people in the library, all right? And my brother learned how to play chess. And how did you get started exactly?
Yeah, so I would say we, in Montreal, we don't really have an outside place to play chess that was big when I was growing up anyways. Not like you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In Square Park or Washington Square Park in New York. So, you know, it was mainly through chess clubs. And there's really just one chess club in Montreal that I went to when I was a kid. And that's where you find, you know, coaches or just mm-hmm. people who will give a lesson on a Saturday, or just that's where you join local tournaments with people that who are your age or your rating. And from there, I started doing these tournaments from that. And, you know, after that, there was like this team of young chess players of Quebec. It's a French name, but I just like translated it. And yeah, they formulated some team of young chess players. And I was granted a position in that young team. And we would meet once or twice a week with like really good coaches. The best that we had in Montreal, which is actually not bad for compared to what we have in Canada. And it was pretty good.
Yeah. Did you ever go to chess tournaments by yourself, or was you always part of a team?
Oh, I always went by myself with my parents, my dad or my mom, never with a team. Mm-hmm. It's just, they formulated this, team. I mean, everybody goes individually, but I knew everybody who was
so
there.
So y'all never did like team tournaments where like each point counted by like each player that played in the tournament?
Oh, that's more like school events, right? You guys have that too?
Yeah. Well, so my first team that I joined was in high school. But before that, in middle school, I was just independent by myself. So I was going to ask, like, what would be like the, because there are clearly differences between like playing for yourself and playing for a team, which there's a lot more pressure on you to perform correctly if you're playing with a team.
Right.
So, all right.
Yeah.
And was you dominating everybody clearly in the tournaments? Did you win most of them, or was it like, you won some, you lost some, things of that nature?
Yeah, so my learning trajectory was very slow. I never had online chess that was super big in my house anyways. We had like a main computer for the house, but I wasn't like on it 24/7 for chess. Not until I was like 13, I think. So really, my way to improve is either play physical chess by myself, either with a book or me playing myself, which happened often, or I played in tournaments, and I would play in tournaments. We would try to play in the tournament at least once a week. So my parents were very dedicated to get me into those chess tournaments, and that's how I would gain that experience. So, yeah, what was your question again?
Just well, you already answered it, but
Okay,
yeah,
perfect.
you answered it, no worries. But I was gonna ask you next. So you've been playing chess for like a decade, right? And so what was your rating? Pretty much, I want to go by like each year. What was your rating, and how did you break those barriers?
Okay, so I've been playing chess more than a decade, 16 years. So when you think about that and you do the math with my age, 21, I started playing when I was 5.
5 years old. That's crazy. That's
Yeah.
like grandmaster
Unlike a lot of grandmasters, I didn't have a parent who was very good at chess. You know, many of these chess players, they had a parent who really loved chess, and then they like quit, you know, for a job or something, and but they vowed to teach their child, right? And the child is like a prodigy now, right? I never had that. My parents are in the medical field. They didn't really know chess, and once I beat them once, they were done with me. They sent me off to a chess club and they said, "No more in this house," basically. So I
That's
never played
hilarious.
against my siblings. I never played against my parents, which is kind of unusual, I think. So at 5, it was a very kind of lonely journey just playing on my own and trying to find somebody who was as good as me, which never happened in school and never happened in my household, which is kind of crazy to think about. So yeah.
I don't think it's that unusual though, because
Really?
my household was pretty much the same. I was the only one that knew how to play chess. My brother taught me, but he didn't really coach me on how to play
Right.
chess. And like I'll always tell everybody, like in my first episode, I told people, I learned how to play chess on a PlayStation 2. It was this game called Chess Master. I don't know if you know this old
Chessmaster
software.
9000?
Yeah, it was that game.
No way, I have that on
Yeah, I learned how to play on that game. I love the Josh Wainskin's lessons. It was the
Mac. Right.
best. It was the best. And that's how I got like all my knowledge was from that one game, and then my knowledge branched out onto like YouTube, and there is this Maurice Ashley platform that I used to play on. It's super old. I can't name it right now, but yeah, that's where I learned from.
I have a super funny story about Chessmaster 9000. Everybody back in the day, and this goes back to me, to my family being a MacBook family, like Apple. We were at a chess club, a weekly chess club with this IM, International Master. And this IM was pretty severe, kind of like with 9 and 8 year old kids. And everybody in that class were required to submit like some chess-based PGNs to the professor to show off their game once in a while. And I didn't have that chess-based software. Notoriously does not work on Mac, but it's the best. Chess-based is the best. So I had Chessmaster 9000 having to work with that, and I just remember the embarrassment in class when I submitted my PGN, which was really not a PGN. I just said like white rook on h7, white king on h6, black king on h3. And it was complete, like, it was not like of the PGN format required for the class. And this guy shamed me in front of the entire class for using Chessmaster 9000.
Dang.
Big trauma.
That's messed up. I didn't have that. It's cool to see it from that perspective. I never really had a coach, so that's, I mean, I guess that's kind of good, but at the same time, it could have been detrimental. You could have been like, ah, I quit. Like, I'm done with chess. You're not just gonna embarrass me in front of my classmates. Like, that's messed up. But I don't know. How do you feel about that? Do you think that that was needed, or do you think that, he could have probably laid back a little bit?
I think he could have laid back. I feel like, yeah, it's like kids at the end of the day, but he was a little bit of a grump, so you know, it is what it is. Yeah.
So that just brings me up to my next question. Do you think that what should be prioritized in chess, having fun or like just learning concrete skills and like trying to win each game?
That's crazy for me because I had fun for most of my career and even into content creation. and I was competitive in the competitions, but outside the competitions, I wasn't that competitive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that
So
makes
let's
sense.
say in a chess tournament, I'm ultra competitive, right? I'm all in. But the second the tournament's over, it's like I don't care about my previous games, or I don't, because I treated chess as a competitive hobby. That's the best way I can define it. So I had chess at the same time that I had judo or I had soccer. I played competitive soccer for 6 years, and that.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Really intermittently came with chess. Oftentimes at tournaments, I would take a bye on the second round. A bye is like a free half point to like not go to the round. I would take a bye on the second round to go to soccer practice. Like, so for me, when I was a child, it was about having fun pretty much. And that's why it's been 16 years that I've been playing this game, and I'm 2300, which is it's kind of an underperformance when you look at the number of years. It's because I wasn't going hard on every year since 5 years old. I was having fun, treating it as a hobby. And I think it really depends on the individual. If you have a hard-earned goal that you really hard-struck goal that you want to get to IM, International Master, Grandmaster, or FIDE Master, then you need to work. You need to work, and you need to work hard every day. And these things are not going to come to you. International Master, a lot of people just say, oh, I want to be an International Master one day, maybe if I can, right? It's extremely hard to be International Master. Even Grandmaster, I think there's only 1,600 in the world, and there's tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people who try to get Grandmaster, right? So it really depends on your goal. If you love the game and you just like it as a passion, play it for fun. I've played it for fun for most of my career, I would say. And that's what's keep me so here so long is because I was really passion first, which can avoid you being really mentally frustrated from a bad performance in the tournament if you're just 100% in all the time. And that's where it can be discouraging to have bad results in chess and ultimately discourage you to the point of quitting or temporarily leaving the game.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. I have a lot of good memories just having fun playing chess. And I have a lot of good memories just doing bad habits, like, for example, staying up late at night before the tournament playing bullet chess, which worst thing possible. And then that morning getting McDonald's, it's like the worst thing that you could do, that you could do to disrupt your performance, which I'm pretty sure that day, that's when I got like checkmated on like the H2 square with like the queen bishop combo.
No, the
And it's
battery they've
like,
on.
yeah, I know. And I was the leader of my chess team. I was the leader. And I got checkmated the first round. And so I feel bad for the rest of the guys because they're like, well, why is this dude so strong? Didn't he lose his first game? But I don't regret it though, like having those fun times, like knowing what Buckhouse is, playing four-way chess in like a chess club. I don't regret those times. So yeah. But you can learn stuff too. You could be hardcore at it. There was times where I did chess puzzles all night, just trying to get my calculation up. So you could do both. You can balance it out. What do you think if somebody's trying to reach a certain rating, let's say, I don't think like 1600 is a good average rating to have in like your chess career. What do you say? What's the correct percentage to have? Like with fun and like concrete discipline.
If you want to get to 1600, it depends how fast you want to get to 1600. If you want to get to 1600 very fast, then you work very hard and very consistently every day. If you want to get to 1600 as an ultimate goal on a 5-year plan, have fun. Learn freaky openings. Go to chess tournaments once in a while, you know, play bullets, you know, and ultimately, maybe that's a more enjoyable experience if you, you know, really want to just have it treated as a hobby, right? And as a passion more than just, you know, if I don't win this, I'm going to die, you know?
Yeah.
And it's less stressful.
And so speaking about openings, let's get to the juicy topic now, the knowledge, all right? What type of openings should you play if you're trying to reach like a good rating, like 1600?
So that's very interesting. Many people, you know, take the super grandmaster approach. So they look at what the super grandmasters are playing and they usually go upon that. Those openings are usually super complex, super multi-variational, so a lot of variations, and super complicated to understand, right? As a whole.
All right.
What I would go for is something that's still solid at the 2500 level or 2400 level. That's really, really played a ton, and play that, because usually those openings are more easy to understand. They're not lazy openings. Like, there are some openings that are lazy. I'll name one. It's called the London system. Okay.
Yep.
This is a big trap, because you learn the London system, which is like 7 moves that you play in a row every single game with the white pieces. It's solid. But then when it comes to time that you play against somebody who actually knows how to play against the London, you don't know anything past 7 or 8 moves, you're cooked.
Yep.
So that can be a big problem. And so I would just learn an opening which you memorize, you know, a few of your different opponent's replies, and then, you know, you're essentially, you're good for a long time. I've played the same opening with white for 16 years, and it never fails to amaze me in these 7 or 8 different variations that I always go in. That opening is called the Gioco Piano, by the way. It's the Italian, okay. But you play C3 on move on 4. And so, yeah, I really enjoy it. So ultimately, the approach shouldn't be like all immediately looking at a grandmaster or another player's opening. It's really knowing your style, knowing what you prefer, attacking chess, aggressive chess, or more positional chess, strategical chess, where maneuvers are more the essence of the position. The pawn structure is more important, and the end game is more thought of in that opening, right? There's two very distinct chess openings there. So knowing your style, knowing yourself, knowing what you prefer in chess, and then learning an opening that offers those types of positions. So let's say if you are a very aggressive player, you would play the Sicilian as black, because you know that the king's castle opposite sides, and you can attack the other king on that opposite side more often and more aggressively. You can let your pieces go crazy. You can do sacrifices however you want. If you want a more positional opening, what would I recommend for a positional opening? I would say like the Semislav, which is what I play with black. It's pretty positional. And, you know,
Semislav is complicated. Like, that's complicated.
It's complicated, but it's the essence of that opening, right? It's just an example. So it's more positional. Or the French defense is a bit less tactical, I would say, than a lot of openings. The Caro-Kann also a bit less tactical. And so, yeah.
So
going according to your style.
So when the problem that I have, like teaching that online, people always ask that question, what openings that they should do. And I give that general, like, that's perfect advice. Like, whatever's your chess personality, that's the opening you should be going down. But they always ask the second question, generally speaking, what opening do you think is like the best, right? Like, let's say an opening for white and then an opening for black. And perfect. I know opening for black. So let's say if white responded e4 and then a different opening if white responded d4.
Okay, so the best, I'll put it as, yes, I catch some streamers once in a while for 5 minutes here and there, just to see what's going on in the chess world, what's popping, what people are doing. And I caught 1 5-minute one time of Daniel Naroditsky, a very famous streamer, chess streamer, shout out, by the way. And he said in the 5 minutes that I was watching some really great advice according to chess openings. And I won't budge. Like, I won't say what the best opening is against e4 and d4, because there really isn't.
Right.
And this is what he said. Openings are like getting dressed. There's not one perfect way of getting dressed. You either go for a style. Let's say you're going fancy, so you put on a suit and tie or a tux, right? Or you're going casual, streetwear. Or, you know, you're going to I don't know. You're going to a business meeting, so you're business casual, right? So there's not one opening that's perfect, that's the best, that's going to run you the best results ever. There are some, don't get me wrong, there are some bad openings out there. A lot of gambits are terrible, but there are a lot of great openings, fantastic openings, cannot be measured against other fantastic openings because it depends on your style. It depends how good you're going to play with that opening. And if it matches your style, it's just going to give you that extra edge that those other fantastic openings wouldn't give you.
Right. And speaking about gambits, what do you think are some solid gambits to play? Some suggestions other than like the Jerome gambit or like the Frankenstein gambit? No gambits like those. Those are ugly gambits. Don't ever do those.
I have never posted a video on gambits in my life throughout thousands of videos that I've made across 5-6 different platforms. There's a big reason.
Okay.
What?
You haven't?
Yeah,
I'm surprised.
Yeah, I haven't. And the reason why is because I don't promote gambits. More so, gambits are most gambits are detrimental to your chess style long term. So it probably is a hot take, but it is really true to what I believe. If you're 1200 and you use gambits and you win quick, and then you get to 1600, and then somebody learns against people, the 1600 squad, well, the groups will know how to play against your gambit, you're cooked because you don't know what to do. You don't know what to play against somebody who knows actually how to play against your gambit. And then the white pieces, you know, against you start with like +2, +3 evaluation, and you have a terrible position at that, even if it's equal material. So really, when I'm regrouping my thoughts here, gambits are most of the time, okay, I play some gambits, most of the time, they're really detrimental to your chess long term, in my belief. They're very fun, and some are great, but some are just detrimental. Now, the ones that I love, and this is one that I play all the time, is called the Schliemann's Gambit. Let me put you on. Against the Ruy Lopez, which is a very irritating opening, right, in which the bishop goes to g5 to b5 on move 3. Oftentimes, either you play like knight f6 or a6, and you get into something closed or some, I don't know, end game like the Berlin defense. Mm-hmm. And these are suboptimal when you're playing the black pieces. Now, I have an aggressive chess style, so I know myself. And so I took 1, 2, 3 months to learn properly the Schliemann's Gambit. Schliemann's Gambit is going 3, f5. And what you're doing here with f5 is that you're tipping the scales. It's a really unbalanced opening. But it works. Magnus Carlsen has played it with the black pieces against Vichy Annan. And it's a very interesting opening. And in a lot of cases, if white plays very, very well and knows their lines, they finish like that opening with a pawn up. But still, the black pieces have a really active position with really good piece activity and a really good pawn structure in the center. So it's a and in a lot of cases, the white pieces fumble. And that's what I love about it. It's a really good gambit. Now for the white pieces, I still have belief in like the Evans gambit. I think the Evans gambit is a solid one. Garry Kasparov played it for a lot of his career in the 80s, and he was really, really strong with it. I mean, there's for a lot of time, we didn't know a reply to the Evans gambit and people feared it. So that's a really respectable gambit as well.
I think what you said right there is perfect. I'm against learning gambits, especially in the beginning. I actually did a whole podcast episode, if you want to go back and watch that, about like why I stopped playing gambits. But if I was suggesting gambits, I would suggest the Evans gambit. And there is another gambit. Queen's Gambit. The Queen's Gambit is not even a gambit. I know, that's why he's laughing. But the Queen's Gambit is perfect, and Everybody wants to learn the King's Gambit. Everybody wants to learn how to play the Danish Gambit, which I have done videos on, guilty as charged. I get it. I'm teaching bad practices. But I always say, do not, if you're trying to learn how to play chess, if you're not just playing, I mean, those gambits is usually for people who wants to just play for fun. Not for the people who want to.
No, those gambits are solid. The gambits you just mentioned, the Queen's Gambit, is the most solid gambit on earth. It's not even a gambit. I don't even consider it a gambit.
Exactly.
And the Danish and the Scotch gambits, perfect openings, by the way.
The Danish? The Danish
is the Danish is fine.
It's kind of scary for beginners.
The Danish is fine up until like, 22, I would say, when they really know it with the black pieces. But the Danish is a really solid gambit as far as gambits goes. There's a lot of range to gambits. Some gambits are completely trash. Yeah. I once tried the Budapest gambit. Like, this is like complete garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like, there's a lot of complete garbage gambits. So as far as gambits goes, I would put the Danish in like B or A tier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We're going to have to, I'm going to have to get you back on here. We could do like a gambit tier list.
Tier list.
That's going to be funny.
That'd be such a fun collab.
I know, right? That would be cool. Okay. So that's cool about gambits. So y'all still have hopes if you're trying to learn gambits, but it has to be solid gambits. It cannot be bad gambits. If the computer says -3 after you give away that pawn, then that's a bad gambit. Do not do it. All right. That's some good advice. Okay. Now, so you're at the rating on chess.com 2300. What is your USCF rating?
So because I'm from Canada, I only have a USCF rating for the tournaments I've been to in the States, which was, I think, like 4. I've been to like New York State for a tournament a couple times. Have I just been to New York for tournaments? Maybe New Jersey won a rated tournament, something like this. So I think my USCF, what the USCF, US Chess Federation would do is they would bump up my Quebec rating. So Quebec is the province in Canada where I'm from, kind of like the region or the state, as you will, of Canada where I'm from. And so I would have a rating from there, and the USCF would pump that rating up 200 points just to aggregate it to USCF, you know, inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have like a really crazy rating. I remember when I was competitive in chess tournaments, I would have maybe 2,000 Quebec rating. So FQE rating, we would say, FQE. Mm-hmm. And the US Chess Federation would give me 2,200 out of nowhere. And I felt like I had to play up to this incredible standard in US tournaments in which, you know, I had to play like in these like open sections with like players who were much better than me and et cetera. So I think my USCF right now treads around, I haven't checked it in so long. I don't think I've played a USCF rated tournament in like maybe 8 years.
8 years?
Yeah, other rated tournaments is like, so a FIDE tournament I haven't played in 5 years. And then an FQE tournament, which is that region's rating, I haven't played in 4.5 years going on 5 years.
Yeah, why have you played in a tournament anymore?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, actually. I moved to college to a smaller town from Montreal, and I would say I hadn't played a real chess tournament in 6 months, and so I went and I moved to college to a very small town where there's no chess tournaments, and it let me focus on content creation and less on, you know, excelling at chess, going for a title, being extremely serious at chess, which would be that age where you go all or nothing on chess or you go all or nothing on content and make a career for yourself. So I said to myself,
I actually got a question. Can you explain to people how hard it is to do both content creation and training?
It's near impossible. So because I didn't have an editor I didn't have a serious editor until like 3 months ago, I would go live on Twitch during the day. I still do, by the way. Go live on Twitch during the day and then make one YouTube video and one YouTube clip or just like a clip for all platforms at night. So it's like more than a full-time job. I think I'm working 10 to 11 hours a day. Basically, you know, having low sleep, if I'm being honest, while being a full student. So that's a full-time student, 5 classes. during the semester. I'm finishing my third semester this year, and so yeah, you go all in something, and it's really like a more than a full-time job. But I'm super grateful that I have the opportunity to be here and to make content, and it's a joy to make content, come up with new ideas. It really spurs my creative reach, which is really something I didn't have to experience with, you know, since before like school. I feel like I'm finding a lot of those creative pulls that you had when you were a kid, you know, like super creativity there. So yeah, it's my life basically.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's all that you do is content creation?
Yes, I do content creation. The reason why it takes all of my time is because it's on 5 platforms. I also run a retail business, a limited edition retail chess business of like wooden items that I sell seasonally. So I'll sell like a drop of like 10 or 20.
I seen that on your Instagram. Those are some good looking chess boards. If y'all want to follow them on Instagram, what is it? The chess nerd, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I seen them. Those look really nice.
Yeah. So that's like one every season. It takes a lot of time to, you know, contact a manufacturer or a supplier and get a design in, get a specific, you know, exactly what you want. Because I've been a chess collector also for like 10 years. I've collected chess pieces, chess boards. So I know exactly what's amazing and I know exactly what's not so good, what doesn't sell, or it's not appealing to me personally, right?
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, I do that on the side in my extra time.
Okay, this is probably going to be controversial. What is the boards that you like the most?
So it depends what you're going for. If you're going for passion, like you want a board to study on, you want to be, or you want to look over a game from 1948 and get yourself in the mood, then you should go with wood. I really do believe that. If you're going for blitz and you always play blitz on your chessboard, you're going for plastic, 100%.
Yeah.
But if you don't play chess, you go for a themed board, or you go for, you know, shot glass board, or you go for one I really dislike is the marble or the granite boards. I really just
you can't
don't
play
like
chess
them.
On those is just decoration.
And the metallic metal boards. I hate metal boards.
Yeah,
like, I'm airing all my dirty laundry out right now.
So I went to this chess tournament one time. It was a USCF chess tournament, and there was this kid. He was 1900, like 8 years old, 9 years old. He brought this pink chess set. and it distracted me so much. I'm like, I would not. And it's this grown man, 30 years old, like playing. I'm like, I could not play chess on that. And I have never been interested in like these Mario chess sets or the Simpsons chess set. I've seen them before. I would never buy them.
Well, it's not for chess players. It's
I know.
Those fans who would play chess. You know, a Mario fan who would play chess on, you know, a Mario themed board.
That is true. But it takes a lot of work to play chess on those boards. They don't have like the name written on them either. You just have to guess. Right. Oh, is that the pawn? Is that the king? Or is that the rook? That's funny.
So just for me personally, wood is king. Wood is the goat. Wood is the best.
Yeah, you got to get a wood chess board. I still need to get me a personal wood chess board, but I'm saving up for a really good wood chess board, like a DGT board. Yeah.
That's how you do that.
Yep, exactly. So, to the next question. How did you start? Which platform did you start on out of all 5 of them?
Absolutely great question. I started on Instagram, which is not the typical answer. Who starts on Instagram for chess? When I started on Instagram for chess, Instagram was not known, not a thought for chess, right?
Nope.
I started January 2nd, 2018. And the reason why I know that by heart, it's a weird thing to know by heart, is that it's a New Year's resolution. So January 2nd, on January 1st, I made the New Year's resolution. And on January 2nd, I started it, right? Mm-hmm. So I started on Instagram. That was 5 years ago. Imagine 2023, already 5 years. And yeah, I started retracing this amazing tournament that happened in 1953, the Zurich International Chess Tournament, a very, very famous tournament, and even more famous chess book by David Bronstein, who is one of the greatest chess players to never become world chess champion. Mm-hmm. And that book is a double round robin, 15 of the 16 best chess players in the world. So double round robin is that you play everybody once with the white pieces and once with the black pieces. This makes for a total of 230 or 225 chess games. So a ton of chess games were played in that tournament. And that's one of the largest chess tournaments ever in history. Double round robins with that many competitors is unheard of today. They would never do that today. It's just too long. I think this tournament was like 1 or 2 or 3 months long. And so, yeah, I retraced every one of those 220 games, and I'm still going at it 5 years later. I think I'm at game 180. I'm 40 games away. It's a really, really long tournament. And yeah, that's how I started. I just took pictures of my chessboard on a given position of game one, game two, game three, game four. And slowly but surely, I grew.
Well, you probably have to, you just didn't want to become a content creator. You're probably watching other people, right? So what people was you watching at that time, either on YouTube or whatever platform that you was watching? What is those creators' names?
Yeah. Infamously, I do not watch content creators. That's something I will admit to. Yeah,
Oh,
it's
you
really
so you
crazy.
just started making videos just on your own?
Well, the thing, okay, so I need to defend myself here
All
because this is
right.
looking bad on me. So, Devon,
It
the second I would watch a content creator, let's say Benjamin Feingold back in the day, or who was big back, oh, St. Louis Chess Club, huge.
John
I
Bartholomew.
would get an who?
John Bartholomew, do you know who he is?
Yeah. No, I would watch more GJ Chess. I don't know if you know that guy. He would
Nope,
do
I
chess
never heard of
openings,
him.
very fire. Anyways, that's one of the YouTubers I would always watch. But the second I would watch these guys, I would get an insatiable urge to get off of the video and make some content on my own. Because I would Yeah, because I would have this insurmountable kind of need to convince myself that I can make some content similar than this, or I can make something better than this. All comes back to the competitiveness of a chess player. Chess players are some of the most stubborn competitive people on earth.
Man, yeah, you was born for this, man. You was into this. I watched their content for hours on hours when I was a teenager. King Crusher, all of them, all the
King's Crusher is
OGs.
so funny.
And yeah, Chess Bros, man, I watched all of them. Mostly Chess Bro, John Bartholomew for knowledge. Chess website. They're all still going too, which is funny, but yeah, those are the people that I used to watch. I never had that urge. It just proves
Wow.
that, hey, you was meant for this. Yeah, nope. I was just watching. I was amazed because when I was growing up, just like I told you, I learned from Chess Master. And I thought that the only grandmaster, I thought that Josh Wayskin was like the best. There is Josh Wayskin, and then there is nobody else. And I just didn't have knowledge about any other chess player that was really great. And so when I seen like the chess brawl, Chris, well, not Chris Hansen. Oh my
Eric
goodness,
Hansen.
Eric Hansen. Not that Hansen. But Eric Hansen, when he was doing these like. 10 seconds, he was beating these grandmasters in 10 seconds in bullet. I was like, what is this? That's when my mind started expanding. And so that's crazy that you just went from, oh, watching this guy and was like, oh, let me create my own content that could be a little bit better than theirs.
Yeah, I mean, it was always like a far-fetched dream, but how do you know if the dream is at all attainable, or if it's actually a dream if you don't go chase it? So that's what I did.
Yeah, that's really
Speaking
good.
on Josh Waitzkin, you're not entirely wrong there. Josh Waitzkin is the best for something.
What?
The movie about him is, without a doubt, the best chess movie on the planet Earth.
You talk about searching for Bobby Fischer?
Correct.
Wow.
It has
That's
100% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics. 100%. Name me a movie off the top of your head that's 100% on Rotten
They
Tomatoes.
did him wrong. He was too young. He was too young. And then it wasn't even about Bobby Fischer. That's the sad part. It's like,
yeah, gosh, the title is so misleading. You know, they changed the title a couple times.
Finally, they should. Bobby Fischer should not be in that title.
No, they changed it to that. The movie wasn't selling enough, so they put Bobby Fischer in the title.
Oh, is that like back in the day clickbait? That's crazy.
Exactly. So clickbaited.
Dang. Yeah, because I only watched the movie because of that title. Well, they got their money.
At the end of the movie, you're like, yeah, it's a fantastic movie, but where was Bobby Fischer?
Pretty much. And then we got Pawn Sacrifice. What do you think about that movie?
Pawn Sacrifice, a lot of people say it was terrible. It's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Like, I seen a video by Danny Ranch that said, like, the pieces were not exactly in the right place in one part of the movie. I was like, I don't care. It's finally a Bobby Fischer movie. That's the movie that should have been Searching for Bobby Fischer. That's the exact movie that should have been named that. I don't care.
And Tobey Maguire played the character very well.
Yeah, he did. He did a perfect job. I would say a perfect job of characterizing him and like characterizing like how psychotic. I don't know what the nice word to say, but he definitely wasn't in the right frame of mind when he became the best.
Totally.
So. Yeah, now he did a really good job. And we might as well just get on the last series. Queen's Gambit, what do you think about that? Netflix series.
Queen's Gambit is unprecedented in the world of chess, just in terms of the accuracy of ratings, commentary, the placement of the chessboards, the moves that Beth does. Queen's Gambit is the reason that why chess is talked about in the conversation, not only in the conversation today.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, nah, that was a big series, and I appreciate it. And I watched it. I thought it was pretty good. Good story. A little bit.
Yeah.
It prolonged at the end, but, you know, I still like it. I could have done without an episode. Just to criticize it. Just one time. I know I'm going to get some haters for it. Whatever.
That's good. It needs some criticism.
Yeah, it needs some criticism. And they need to come out with that second season. Supposedly, I don't know. Was that fake? I don't know if that was fake or not. But
what do you mean?
I think somebody teased that there was going to be a second season. I think somebody teased it.
I mean, the actress who played Beth has been very busy in other movies since that dropped. So I'm not sure she's filming a second season. All right.
Well, that's good. I mean, it pretty much ended at the correct moment. All right. So after you got on Instagram, you started making content, which platform did you go on first? What was the order?
So I was on Instagram as the chess nerd for about 2 years. And it was all going well on Instagram. And then one day, somebody called Mark Zuckerberg. I think he had bought Instagram at this point.
Mm-hmm.
On one day of April in 2019, so about a year and a half after I had started, he tanked the algorithm. The algorithm tanked night and day. It was crazy.
Wow. Wait.
Yeah. So
it was just pictures back then, right? Was it videos too, or
no? It was mostly pictures. Pictures.
How did it tank?
So I would have a post that would have a reach of 5,000 people. For an account that had 1,000 followers, that was huge. It's like 5,000. It's like five times your following, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would have such a good, you know, reach, and that would boost me to make posts 2 to 3 times a day, sometimes 3 times a day, like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then in April, something that happened, I was going from, 50 to 100 followers a day, which was tremendous for me at the time, to zero, one, minus five, minus two. It was nuts. And what was going on is that my posts were just reaching my followers, if that.
Dang. I didn't even know that was going on.
And so you have two choices as a content creator. You quit immediately on the spot, and this isn't for you because that might be a long-term thing to your 1 year and a half, you know, endeavor. Or you go to another platform, keep posting on Instagram. You still have love for Instagram. You still have a very, really tightly knit community on Instagram. But you go somewhere else. And that's where I went to YouTube. Now, YouTube has even less reach than Instagram. But I started posting videos on YouTube for the fun of it.
Yeah.
You know, And it didn't even do that well anyways. Instagram was my main pull for most of my content creation career until I would say 2021, 2021 summer, in which on YouTube, I released, in the peak of the pandemic, I released Chess in Public. Beat me at chess, win $100.
In the peak of the pandemic? Oh, crap.
Yeah. So we had masks on, and there was some little gel for your hands, some moisturizer. But yeah, I did this challenge in which I challenged people on the street of Montreal. They could come play me in the crazy sun of the summer. And yeah, if they beat me, they won $100. And I did that challenge. That video did super well and got me like a little presence on YouTube. I think I that video did like 300K views, which was really not bad for the chess world at the time.
Right.
This is right after the Queen's Gambit. And so, yeah, it did really well. 300K views. I got to like 5,000 subscribers on YouTube. And for me, that was a huge win at the time. That was my first time detaching from Instagram, which was not a platform to grow on anymore.
Right. And that kind of makes sense. Yeah, there was like no, well, I want to say no presence on you, like chess on YouTube, because I think that's when Hikaru Nakamura started streaming at that time, right? On Twitch. And I remember a long time ago, like before he even got on Twitch, he streamed like a 24-hour, he was playing chess for like 24 hours one day. I can't believe it. But that makes sense, though. That makes sense that you got that much exposure from that video. It's a good catchy title, too. I wouldn't even be surprised if there's like a catchy thumbnail that you put.
I just put the $100 I slapped it on. It's on the main thing, and you know, people clicked.
Yeah, that's really good. So you went so Instagram, YouTube. What's the next platform?
Instagram, YouTube. Can you guess my last platform?
So you already surprised me with Instagram first, honestly.
For real? No. Like, nobody starts on Instagram. Yeah. I'm sorry. So nobody does.
I will say Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, and TikTok.
Okay. So I went to Twitter next.
Twitter.
Wow. And Twitter is the hardest platform. Twitter is so difficult to grow on. I've only started growing on it, I would say, in the last 4 months. Pretty good.
I quit. Like, I just got back on there recently. My bad. Follow me on H1 Chats on Twitter. Yeah. But I was like, this is not working out, honestly.
Because the reach you get is zero. It's zero as a starter account. It is net zero. Right. And I have been on Twitter probably 3 years. It's only started for me in the past 3 months. And like, I'm not even that big. I have 2,800 followers, I think. And my other platforms tread in the at least 10K.
Yeah, so that's what I didn't get either.
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy, right?
No, it really is. And like, yeah, I understand how you feel too. And I tell people to, oh yeah, go follow my Twitter. No kids from TikTok that has a half a second attention span is going on your Twitter.
Nobody's going on your Twitter. Nuts with the half attention. I think I lose 1 out of 4 people in the first 3/4 of a second.
Yeah. That's how fast it is. And yeah, I could talk about short form content all day. But yeah, it seems like your short form content is going up there, though, because you make short form content on, you make Instagram Reels and you're on TikTok too.
And I'm on shorts for YouTube. I do all three. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, then I went to Twitter. Twitter is really so slow growth. I think you have to be already famous if you want a following on Twitter. And so I wasn't already famous. So that's difficult.
Right.
It is what it is. But yeah, then it was Twitter, which is even worse reach than YouTube, which was an even worse reach than Instagram. And then it was TikTok. And my latest platform was last year, Twitch. I've been a Twitch streamer for 1 year and 2 months. I just got partner 3 days ago.
Oh, snap. Well, can I ask who you got partner with, or does it have to be after the podcast? Does it have to be after the episode?
I got partner on Twitch.
Okay. Oh, you got partner on Twitch. Okay. Oh, that's really good. No, not married. I thought you was like had like a sponsorship deal or something. Yeah, not married. Yeah, we're both confused. Okay, so you just got partnered on Twitch. How many followers do you got on Twitch?
I have like 17. But you know, people get partnered on Twitch at 1K followers. So I was super like disgruntled because I've been streaming 6 days a week. Like I only surprising. Take a day off on Monday, which is why we could do this Monday. And I literally, it's been like most of my year for the past year, and Twitch was not giving me partner, while other chess content creators on Twitch mm-hmm. were boasting the partner symbol, the badge, and everything at like 1,000 followers, 1,500 followers, which was crazy and a bit irritating, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
So yeah, Twitch was my last platform. So this is the weird part. Mm-hmm. Twitch was my last platform after my Discord community, which means that I had a Discord running, up and running for 8 months, which is usually you create the Discord for your Twitch. Right. I had my Discord up and running 8 months while trying to be on Twitch for the past 3 years. So I had tried with various, I had a bad computer, which was why I couldn't get on Twitch. Mm-hmm. So I upgraded to a computer very finally a year and 2 months ago. And then finally I got onto Twitch with already a Discord community.
Twitch is just, they got a hard entry. And Twitch, it's very hard. Plus I'm surprised too, since you already had like the Poppin' YouTube channel, that these platforms, it's so weird. These platforms is like their own little islands, and you have to like confiscate each island because each island has their own pattern or algorithm to hit those audiences. It's content creation. I get it. So how interesting was it to get a following on TikTok?
TikTok is a really love-hate relationship. I'm not going to lie. You know, now that I think of it, I would have been happy if it had been banned in the States, but I just realized like that doesn't even affect me because I'm in Canada. So it wouldn't even be banned for me. But yeah.
True that. True that.
Yeah, so TikTok is a very love-hate relationship. I've been on TikTok for, I think, 3 years or 2 or 3 years. And, you know, TikTok is really, really smart at getting content creators to stay content creators on their platform. They initially boost content creators' accounts to like 10K in about a week. If you post consistently, they heat a couple of your videos to 1 million views. That's pretty much a given. If they're good videos, albeit.
Yeah.
And then, you start posting constantly and you're not seeing those results for like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months. And TikTok is putting out the middle finger to you, right? is really crazy. And that was it. Like, I was stagnant at 20K followers. Like, what am I doing here? I'm posting once a day. Like, this is exactly what TikTok wants. Yeah. Getting like 1,000 views, 2,000 views, like nothing. After having millions of views in the first 10 or 20 videos of mine. Yeah. I bet you have a similar experience to share.
I can't say. I'm just playing. No, I get the experience and I get the algorithm. It seems like it caters towards comedy or like famous people or just really don't want to be mean, but really dumb stuff. It seems like it caters to that more than actual knowledge. It could just be me, but I'm like, and I'm not going against this. I was going down the streams one day and I seen Hot Wheels on the running. What is that called? It was that workout equipment. It was Hot Wheels going on there. And the purpose of the stream was which car lasts the longest on the equipment on the running machine. And when I get like 2,000 views and they're getting millions just on
millions
that.
Millions of likes, not even views.
Yeah, just millions of likes. I'm like, wow, I'm in the wrong niche. Yeah. It's like, wow, chess is not appreciated. I'm in the wrong niche. And so, yeah, I do get you.
You had me stopped at Twitch, TikTok streams. The TikTok lives are some of the weirdest places you can unearth on this planet.
Yeah. Because you get
I don't know if
suggested
you ever
like people would
scrolled
like,
alive.
yeah, don't go too far down. Don't do that. Because they will literally start just suggesting you zero view streams, and then it just gets weird and really weird. And then
Weirder and weirder, and
there's
it's like, no.
bots, and then there's money grabs, and yeah, it just gets
It's
weird.
trauma. Trauma.
But I mean, most people start on TikTok nowadays. I can't lie. I basically got my traction from TikTok. I do
Right.
appreciate that, but it's kind of like the algorithm. What's the longevity of being on the platform that I'm more worried about? And so, just like you, I'm conquering other islands just to see how each island treats me.
Yeah,
So.
that's what I'll say about TikTok, which is also very discouraging. For us who are under, 100K, I don't think you are, right? You're big on TikTok, actually.
Yeah, I'm like
You're super
200K,
big.
200K
Ooh. Ooh, look
right
at
now.
you.
What,
Vi
yeah,
very fire.
it was a lot of live streaming, man. But even with 200K, I don't, the algorithm's just weird. They still give me 2K views, so I definitely understand. Definitely
Right.
more than anybody.
So the thing with TikTok that I hate, I'll just say it bluntly, is that there's no way to get like really, really good revenue unless lives. I haven't done that many lives for me. So maybe through donations you get a lot, but unless you get a sponsor who's interested in you, there's virtually no money in TikTok under a certain amount of K of followers. The creator fund is a lame excuse for giving money to creators. So that's why like I really don't put effort and time into TikTok for content creation because it's just not cool towards its creators. I get some people on Twitch, like some viewers on Twitch, which is very, very I use TikTok for marketing basically while we're at it. But that's the extent of it. Instagram is an important platform, I believe. Twitter is an important platform. It's like what you say as you, it's the direct
Are you,
filtration of your thoughts.
I got a question about that. Are you paying for Twitter Blue?
No, absolutely not. I think that's a waste of money. Anybody who does needs validation that they shouldn't be needing, in my opinion. Sorry if you have Twitter Blue, you guys.
I was thinking about it, just like I was thinking, okay, maybe this will help me to finally beat that algorithm. But then I'm like, just to put that much effort, I'm not the type of guy that really cares about people hearing me. And plus, if you're, I'm not gonna, I never message there every single day. There's people that message there like every 3 hours because that's how consistent you're supposed to be on the platform. But yeah, it's
Too much.
crazy. It's crazy.
Too much. But the chess community on TikTok is really original, very, very kind. It's really, really a decent community.
Yeah, I see.
I think
I think I see most people doing your plan too, of like they stream on TikTok, but they're promoting their Twitch. I think that's what most
Right.
people are doing nowadays.
Yeah, I don't stream on TikTok. The reason why is I don't think it works that well. I've seen a lot of t big people on Twitch who have started to go onto TikTok to stream. I just don't love the business model. I think from the clips or something a little bit more eclectic that I do for TikTok on my own, I think that's a better way because then they actually get really good value on the spot. And then they're like, okay, this like they have a certain amount of value that I have given them towards me. And so that breeds for respect. That breeds for a relationship, right? So that's what I love about TikTok, but that's the extent of it. Instagram is an important platform. Twitter is an important platform. YouTube and Twitch are the most important platforms. If you have 30K on Twitch, it's not the same as if you have 30K on TikTok.
Yeah, definitely, there's definitely a big separation between those big platforms. But I just wonder if it's going to change in the future. But this is just a weird era of being in like short form content, and then every platform is trying to beat the other platform on short form content. What do you think about
Right.
that? What do you think about the exposure of that?
It's an oligarchy, right? There's three platforms fighting over short form content. I don't even think Twitter's in the race. They should be in the race for short form video content, but they're not. And so yeah, it's a battle. I mean, Instagram had really poor reach on Reels, and they only compensate their creators who post every day on Reels, which is really sad, because if you do really one really quality Reel once a month, you probably won't have that much exposure from it. Whereas TikTok is huge on exposure, but low on quality of the platform. People see dozens of TikToks a day, hundreds of TikToks a day, and if they see yours, it might not be the biggest thing on, it might not be the biggest deal on earth. Yeah. And so, and then you have YouTube. YouTube right now, they're running a lot of movie clips on the short form. That's what's really hitting. I'm seeing millions of views on that. Or for me, it's like soccer or sport compilations. That's fine too. YouTube, ultimately, they pay you for short form content. It's the only one. Yeah. And so that's where you're like, oh, you know, I can make money if I pull in, I think it's 10 million views on short form content plus a number of watched hours.
Yeah, you can make some decent money on there if you pull in millions of views on YouTube.
It's not bad. It's something, which is what the other platforms don't do.
Yeah.
And I like it. I like it that way. Yeah, that's why YouTube is really, really winning, I feel, in the long term.
Yeah, it seems like that. Oh, yeah. What content creators do you watch nowadays? Do you watch any? Because there's a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. It's plentiful. So you have, I see it as two types of content creator. You have content creators, chess content creators who are just sharing their games and they don't have that much experience, but you're kind of following that amateur's journey, which is really, really fulfilling and relatable for a lot of people. Let's say you're 500 rated and this content creator has 700 rating. That's really, really entertaining to see somebody who's maybe just a little bit better than you or just a little bit less good than you. You understand what they're going through, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's content creators like us, right? Who are like 2,200 and above, who are basically, well, who are technically experts and are professionals because we make money off this.
Right.
And we are more professionals. You can follow us, but we also have to give a little personality because we know that we're not as good as grandmasters, right? And so if we're grandmasters, if they go, like, let's say Magnus, if he goes on his stream, he's sarcastic
it's
the entire
so
time because
easy.
He,
it's so easy he, to be the
he,
best, be
he
a content
doesn't
creator.
Have to put on a show because he's the best in the world, and as it should be, you know? So there's really those three types, actually. And, you know, I love being in my type of category because I get to show my super cool personality, which I think, biased opinion, I feel like I have. Mm-hmm. And I am very respectively in the 1% of chess players, the 0.1% of chess, 0.3% of chess players, right? Which is really, really good, which means most of my audience can consume, no, most of the chess players in the world can consume my content.
Mm-hmm.
And not feel like they're better than me or not judge me on every single aspect of what I do, which is amazing.
Yeah, so there's, so who's at the top right now? So there's Gotham Chess, Hikaru Nakamura, there's the Botes sisters. Who else is up there?
I once made a list of everybody who was big on YouTube.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I forget it now. Yeah, Chess Based India is big.
I don't think
we're talking YouTube or we're talking Twitch?
I'm talking both. I don't think I watch them religiously. Like, I see Gotham Chess everywhere on every platform now.
Chess Based India is a force to be reckoned with. First of all, it's a company, so they already have a running product. And from there, they hire editors, and they have rights on real live Super Grandmaster games. So they post clips of, like, Super Grandmasters. You can look on their YouTube. They get 80 million views a video. Like, they're pulling insane views. Oh, yeah. It's, like, absolutely mad.
That's not even funny.
They're the only ones with Gotham really, really drilling the short form content on YouTube.
Right. That makes sense. All right.
Yeah, who else? Who else were you coming up with?
Yeah, I was Eric Rosen. It's Eric Rosen.
Absolutely.
There's some... I think there's some new people, too. Anna Kremlin. And...
Yeah. Fun fact about her, she's my first collab on Twitch before I had Twitch.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, so peak of COVID in 2020, I reached out to her from my Instagram, which was my only platform, but I didn't have Twitch yet because I couldn't run it so far.
Right.
And so I asked her, hey, do you want to do a match? We're like the same rating. And we did a first to 10 match. She was on her Twitch account, right? And I was like screen recording and recording my face for a YouTube video. And that's my first Twitch collab ever before I was on Twitch, which is a very fun fact nobody knows.
Wow. I'm going to have to go back to look at that. But that's, I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's fun. Yeah, but those are the top people nowadays.
Yeah. I think that's a really good top six.
Yes. All right. Yeah, those are the big ones. Yeah, you did a clip with Anna Kremlin a long time ago.
It's actually like, it's basically a stream that I put as a YouTube video because I couldn't stream it. So it's like an hour long YouTube video. It's a thrilling match, really. And so,
did you win?
Yeah. What was that?
Did you win?
I won't say. I won't say. You're gonna have to
come on. He left everybody with a cliffhanger. All right. So, a few more questions. How have you dealt with cheating in like your chess career in the past decade?
So after like 10 years of chess tournaments in person, I've never had encountered one cheater. I've encountered some crazy tournament moments of like somebody screaming in the middle of a 400 person playing hall and just storming out of the building. I've had that, but I haven't had in-person cheaters, right, which is really good. But online is a total different ball game.
Yeah.
Online is cheaters once in a while. Now, in the player pool, so when you just do a random game against other players on chess.com, rated, right? It's really hard to really spot a cheater once in a while because they're your rating. You trust their rating, right?
Right.
But recently, I was doing a more wild arena, the qualifiers for the eSport Olympics on chess.com. And this is a three-hour play as many as you want in the three-hour games with ratings going from 200 to 2500, right? Really anybody in the ballpark.
Right.
And what I encountered there is that people who were very eager to make the Olympics at 1,000 rating were cheating a ton. Cheating a ton. People were getting banned during the event.
How would
in the middle of their games?
How would you cheat? Did they bring out their phones?
The Wild West. Devon, they have a computer. Yes, they have their phone out, or they have another window with the chess computer. It's very easy to have a chess engine while playing online. These are 3-minute blitz games, so they're playing the moves simultaneously on that other window fairly quickly. This demands a lot of
concentration. This is online. My bad. So
yeah, this is online.
Oh, I didn't know that it was going to be that much cheating. What do you think the punishment should be for cheaters? Because I know we don't like. I know the big problem that we have right now is that there's no concrete punishment for cheaters in the chess community and the chess world. What do you think? Just opinion. Of course, you know.
Totally. So what chess.com does right now, if they see a cheater, it's going to obviously be like an account that's like less than 9 days old, you know, joined 9 days ago, joined 40 hours ago, something like this. Mm-hmm. And they're going to ban that account. Now that account, you can make another account with another email and that's super easy.
Right.
What chess.com should really step up and do, and this would stop cheating probably overnight, in my opinion, or cheat first-time cheaters would struggle to cheat again, was what I'm saying, would disrupt repeat cheating, is if chess.com would IP ban individuals online.
Ooh.
So with the IP ban, it's literally your building or your, I don't know how it works, but it's your laptop or your building is banned for life from the chess.com, and you cannot play on the site again.
Dang. Yeah.
So that'd be better.
Yeah, that'll be chaotic, though. Because what if, do you think, because I get this from my Discord sometimes, and I had some people, they're like, my account got banned, I don't know why. Do you think that's serious, or do you think that chess.com always, they know who they're banning. They know that you're a cheater.
Oh, chess.com.
Do you think they make mistakes at all?
Detection is, what was that?
Do you think they make mistakes?
I think they do. I think they do. But chess.com's engine detection, cheater engine detection, something like this, is one of the best, is the best on the internet. I think it's even better than Lead Chess, in my opinion. So, yes, they might get something wrong, but let's say in the Gotham chess controversy, chess.com saw that, Gotham Chess's, this was a very big controversy, I think a year or two ago. They saw that Gotham Chess's opponent was indeed cheating, and it was found out for a fact that his opponent was cheating. So that's on the highest level of the thing. Chess.com came through and made a good call. So I think in some cases it's very, very obvious, but in some cases, like it's an older account and they're not playing at a regular time increment, so they're not playing every 5 seconds, they're not playing a move every 5 seconds. Sometimes it's harder to detect. So I 50-50. I don't know how chess.com judges those ones.
It's man, there has to be a better way. And then plus two, do you think that if you cheated in chess.com, do you think that it should be public to like tournament directors or the chess tournaments that you go to in person? Because
Well, a lot of
that was a
accounts.
discussion that I heard back in like all
Yeah.
the controversy last year.
Yeah, so a lot of chess.com accounts are anonymous, and why would you not be anonymous if you're cheating, But they have recently pulled out something that's called the Verified Badge, and you can pay $20 a year, I believe, not a month, a year, which is better than Twitter Blue, in which you're a verified chess player, so you're attached to a full name, right? And that lets you be essentially like wiped off of cheating because if you do cheat, your name is on there. And yes, okay, they could actually tell tournament directors or they could tell everyone, look, this name is a cheater. That could be a bit crazy, actually.
That could
But
be.
it could be a situation.
Could be. I don't know. It's just a lot of I think it's because a lot more people is coming into chess. That's why it's a big deal nowadays. Okay.
What
Important
has your been
question.
your craziest experience with a cheater? Tell us.
My crazy experience? I the just to think about it, I noticed when somebody's cheating. I actually made a whole episode about like somebody that was cheating in my Discord, and I had to ban him from the Discord and everything. And like he was like trying to DM me on Instagram. He was like, "Man, I got kids. Can I get my money back?" It's like, "No, bro, no. You know about the rules. Come on." And I don't ever know if you're lying. Once you're a cheater, I don't ever know what you're lying about in your life. So the whole pity party that you want to do afterwards, I can't even take you seriously. But that was the only extreme cheater that I knew because he was cheating against everybody and he wanted to play a specific time control with everybody. He always wanted to have 10-second increment. He always wanted, and
Right.
it was so weird that he always wanted to have a 10-second increment. And he played like all his games was over 90% accuracy. And yeah,
It's a red
I
flag.
red flag. And he said that he was using his little brother's account. So that's why his rating was at
Oh,
like
that's
500
such a
Elo.
red flag. Oh, when did they say that? It's a
And
classic.
it sucks because your heart feels for him. He's like, "Oh, snap, I want to believe you." But then when I become a content creator, it's like, dang, now I have to take everybody with a grain of salt and not believe half of you. That says that.
That's kind of true. Yeah.
It's crazy. But before content creation, I never really experienced cheating that much. Well, I was pretty oblivious to it. I don't play longer time controls because of it. Usually when I get a message, "Oh, your rating came back," I was like, "Oh, okay. I guess that guy was cheating." But that's like the only time that I know that somebody's cheating against me.
Right. I
Now,
can see that.
the big question. Hans Niemann or Magnus Carlsen? No, don't do not answer that. I'm just playing. We are not getting sued on this podcast, all right? It's just a joke, all
I think we left that
right?
question in 2022 anyway.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. It's just a joke, all right? Don't sue me. Hey, it's good. Your chest speaks for itself. But anyway, one. Oh, snap. So, What is the fastest way for somebody to improve in chess? What are, like, let's say five tips that you can give somebody that started out in chess that wants to improve the fastest way possible?
Okay, five tips. It's funny you mentioned tips, because I have two very, my most successful long YouTube videos are 82 chess tips to destroy your next opponent and 41 chess tips to destroy your next opponent. So I know about my chess tips.
Yeah.
Haven't done a lot of these. So five chess tips. Okay, let's say for any chess player, so to make it pretty general and accessible to everyone. Number one, I would say play chess. If you're always reading books and you're not touching the game, something's going wrong. You need that practice. The practice is invaluable, because it practices your pattern recognition on the spot. I'm not saying, you know, play bullet all the time. I'm saying play slower games in which you can recognize when an opponent's piece is weak, or you can recognize when the pawn structure is bad, and so you should go to an endgame to, you know, greater attack that pawn structure.
Right.
Recognizing things comes with playing. So get that practice in. Play a lot. If you want to go, the faster you want to go, the more you want to play. The more you should play, in my opinion. So that's my number one, play. My number two would be to practice chess tactics. If you don't know how to win the game of chess by checkmate, you will not win the game of chess. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
So by practicing chess tactics constantly, whether it's at very high level, if you are at very high level, or whether it's at, you know, 500 and you're practicing maiden ones, you need to practice how to finish off the enemy, how to checkmate the enemy. And the more checkmates you know, the more ways you can win a chess game. As simple as that.
Right.
Same goes for chess tactics that don't necessarily checkmate the king, but that win a decisive piece that will eventually win you the game. The more you practice those as well, the more you'll get better at having an advantageous position to convert on your opponent. So that's number two, practice chess tactics as much as possible. Now, resources for that can be found in anywhere from chess books to chess YouTube videos to chess courses to, yeah, just about anything, right?
Yeah,
chess much. Clips. Okay, so that's number two. Number three, I would have a solid opening base, so a solid opening repertoire that matches your chess style. Okay, we've talked about this at the beginning of this podcast, and I won't budge. It's super, super important. You need an opening, or you need to start at least with three openings. So one with the white pieces, that's your go-to. That's e4, d4, c4, knight f3, one of those. And you need to go one with the black pieces, one against e4, and then one with the black pieces against d4. e4 and d4 are, you cannot play the same opening against both of them, unless you play like the Peirce, I believe. But in most cases, you'll play a different opening with the black pieces against e4 and against d4. So learn three openings, two with the black pieces, one with the white pieces. And match that opening to your style. So if you're going aggressive against d4, maybe you want a King's Indian, or maybe you want, I don't know, something like a Benoni, right? If you're going, if you're positional against d4, maybe you want to go like a Nimzo Indian. Mm-hmm. If you're attacking with you want to go with e4 maybe. If you're more aggressive, you want to go e4. If you like open positions, more e4, right? If you want to go more positional, you like d4 more as the white pieces. So there's all these different types of chess styles that match an opening. Okay. So that's number three. Number four.
Coming it's up fine. This is a lot of knowledge for the audience. So just keep on talking, keep on spitting. This is what I do anyways. They're done listening to me. This is all you.
this is more practical knowledge. I would say learn your end games. Learn your end games very well. And end games is my arch nemesis, because I rarely get into end games because I have an aggressive style. So when it goes to an end game, it's such an unbalanced position. Somebody has a piece up, you know?
Right.
So learn your end games because, and this is why end games are so important, in tournament games, so when you'll become a serious player, you'll play in tournaments, weekend tournaments, long games. We're talking an hour and a half each, plus increment of 30 seconds per move, plus a secondary time control most of the time, 40 minutes extra after 40 moves. These are long games, and people play more quality moves, especially if you're at 1400. You'll be quite impressed with how good a 1400 can hold up a game, a five-hour game.
I don't think people know the difference between those two, just in the era that we're in right now, because everybody's used to playing Blitz. But playing a two-hour-long game with a 1400 is not the same as playing a three-minute game with a 1400. It's completely different. All right. It's like, you're like, oh snap, they caught that. Oh snap, they did that sacrifice. Oh wow. They kind of like, you'd be sincerely surprised. And that was a big surprise for me because I played online first before I went to tournaments. And I was like, didn't expect that. Okay. You can continue.
Yeah. So it's such a good point you bring, right? Like a 1400 can hold up a game of 5 hours. And if you're also 1400, you're evenly matched, that can come out to some very even endgames. And knowing your way around endgames, basic endgames like rook endgames, or even more complicated endgames with like knight, bishop, and rook endgames, or knight and bishop endgames, or rook and bishop endgames, all of these endgames are a bit more complicated. Knowing your way around these are much more useful.
So,
and they can bring you wins in competitions. That's the point.
So hopefully I noticed he mentioned rook endgames for a reason. He mentioned rook endgames for a reason. Now, I'll talk about this a lot on my podcast and my live streams, is that the number one endgames that, generally speaking, the number one endgame that you're going to reach most of the time are rook endgames. So you should train on rook endgames first if you want to see improvement in the endgame. All right? So
that's an actual fact that you're saying. One data scientist, I believe, said that 5% of all endgames are rook endgames. More than 5% are all rook endgames, but 5% of all endgames are a particular type of rook endgames that goes to the Lucina position. So 5% of all endgames are a particular rook endgame. So that's insane.
And it makes sense, too, because the rook is the last piece that is developed. The rook is on the back end, like taking over the file. The rooks don't get developed until like some pieces are traded. So it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
So learn your end games would be my number four.
Fifth tip. Last one.
My last tip would be less about the chess game. Okay. And this is something that many people struggle with. At the end of the day, it's a game. Okay. So don't go too hard on yourself. Don't blame yourself too hard. I mean, accountability is good. I made that mistake. It wasn't my opponent. That's also very nice. But it's important to have a solid base and have a solid self-belief in yourself before going and attempting this game big time. And once you do have that solid belief in yourself and you think that you can take the punches of a tournament, I would suggest, this is my fifth tip, go to tournaments. Chess tournaments are competitive. Chess tournaments make you learn, make you experience another dimension of chess, and ultimately can make you play chess in a very professional type of way, a very professional-esque type of way. And that experience under tournament, that competitiveness, especially at 20-plus something years old, you're less in those competitive leagues. You're doing less things that are getting your heartbeat up, right? So I would say try a chess tournament. It's a really good way to have a different type of stress into your system. Play upon your competitive strength and, you know, play upon your focus and your energy level and test yourself, because life is about tasting different things. And a chess tournament is a really good way maybe to try to get a new hobby. And it's a really just a phenomenal way to practice chess overall.
And just to add on that, there's countless times where I went to a chess tournament with classical chess, you know, sitting at the board for like 2 hours, more than like 4 hours. And then I go back home after the chess tournament and I go play a game online, and I'm playing like 200 ELO points ahead of what I usually play. happens all the time, right? Because you're calculating in a classical game and you're calculating for hours on end, and each position that your opponent does, it gets you into. Yeah. And so
you get really good. That's what I love about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
People, yeah.
I was going to say people like sleep on classical chess, but yeah, that is a truer form of chess. That is a truer form.
Yeah, like when you're playing classical, what's really cool is you calculate more on a given position. You treat chess like it's supposed to be treated. In other words, on a certain position in a blitz game, you would take a couple seconds on it. You wouldn't look at all the piece functions and everything because you would run out of time. In classical chess, you have a decency to think of the future of every one of your pieces, which is so cool. You get to plan out meticulously how a knight is going to maneuver to another side of the board for you, or you're going to look at what diagonal is best for my bishop five moves down the line. How can my pawn structure be improved in the next few moves because it's under attack? These closely looked at questions that get asked. And overall, you think about your play and your position so much more, which is so much more valuable than a 3-minute chess game or just online chess in general.
Mm-hmm. And last conversation, all right? Speaking on classical chess, let's get on the World Chess Championship. So Magnus Carlsen suggested that he wanted the World Chess Championship to be like a faster time control, which they denied, and which now he's not world champion anymore since the time controls didn't change. How do you feel about this World Chess Championship that is going on right now?
So there was another clause or possibility that Magnus Carlsen offered, and it was to have the World Chess Championship held in longer time differences. So let's say now it's once every 2 years. And I don't even think this one right now that's going on is 1.5 years after the last one that happened. Mm-hmm. So it's not even giving you, 18 months to prepare for a world championship. It doesn't even give you time to savor your title, which is why you want to be a world champion. So this is absolute bollocks. Once back in the day, it was once every 3 years, which is already a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And then before that, it was, because there was world wars and stuff, some world chess champions held it for very much longer than that. And if you see about the longevity of world chess championships held in terms of historical data, back in the day was much longer than it is today. Yeah. And that is because today there's more world chess championships. So when you're a world chess champion, you're already thinking of the next time you're going to have to defend your title, and it's in not so long, which is putting the world chess champion at a spot where they can't enjoy being number one or having a titanic reign over the world.
Yeah, and can you explain that a little bit for the audience, why it's not like 18 months is not enough time to like defend your world chess championship?
Yeah. So the world chess championship, I think now it's first to, I don't even know because I don't even follow it. I'm big on chess history. I think now it's the first to 12.5 or first to 13, something like this. It's usually best out of a certain amount of points. So best out of 22, which would be more than 11.5, you win, etc. And so now it's at a point where you need to prepare for those 22 games that are about to happen. You need to prepare specifically against the person you know is the challenger. Right. And we only knew the challenger, last summer? That gives the challenger 9 months to prepare and the world chess champion 9 months to prepare for. And you, so you savor it 9 months, you savor the world chess champions 9 months, not even a year. And then you have to prepare 9 months for 22 games.
Yeah.
This is lunacy. And I don't think it's like this.
And he was going through the Grand Chess Tour. He was
exactly.
Which is crazy.
Magnus has a fully booked schedule around the clock. So yeah, there's really not even time to think about being a world champion.
And just to explain to all the newer viewers here, chess didn't used to be as prolific as it is today. It didn't just used to be like a world chess championship or a top 10 chess players tournament every single weekend. It used to be like a year. You would have to wait for like a whole year for these tournaments, or you just won't know about them. Or it used to be like months, like separate. It used to be a bigger distance. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it used to be three
Yeah, it
years
used to be a
for a
longer
lot.
duration for these tournaments.
It used to be 3 years for a lot of the 20th century. When you look at World Chess Champions back in the day, a lot of them had intervals of 3 years for World Chess Championship or in groups of 3 years. So let's say you have the first that comes to mind is Tigran Petrosyan. He was the Armenian World Chess Champion, and he was World Chess Champion in 1963. And then he challenged it to Boris Spassky in 1966. He won that one, so he was still world champion. But winning that defending title gets you an extra 3 years no matter what. And then finally in 1969, he lost to Boris Spassky again. But that's good because now he's 6 years world chess champion, getting world chess champion once and defending his title once, which is so much better. Whereas now, if you defend your title once, what, you're world chess champion for less than 4 years?
Yeah, which it's
What is
kind
it?
of I get his sight, and it's kind of not worth it anymore. Which hopefully he could still reach his rating at like 2900. I do want to see that. Now, how do you feel about this recent tournament that's going on? The World Chess Championship. I think it's Ding Liren against Jan Nepo.
Yeah, so I think that because chess has grown so much in the past recent times, that this tournament is big, and the chess world needs to provide big tournaments to new viewers so that, there's some good chess content. There's some great chess competitions like the Grand Slams in tennis, right?
Right.
But in this case, you have not the best players in the world playing. You have number two and number three. Because we all know that Magnus Carlsen is number one. He's defended that title since 2013, in which he beat Vichy-Annon.
And I went over this tournament. I went over the Jan Nepo tournament before against Magnus Carlsen on the podcast, and I went over like how much of a rating difference or just how Jan Nepo performed in that tournament. This was so bad against Magnus Carlsen. It just shows how much Magnus Carlsen is above all the other chess players still, and nobody has really reached his rating and his level yet. And
Which
yeah.
should just give FIDE another reason why they should more accommodate Magnus and not some two or three that is 60, 70, 80 FIDE points below him.
Yeah,
It
this.
just makes sense like that. So for me, my personal opinion on this match, which is controversial, which I agree, and I've said this on my Twitch many times, so I'm not like scared to say this. I've said it many times. People disagreeing is fine. Is that this world championship is not that official. Because although for FIDE, the World Chess Championship title will change, in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of the world and in the true raw chess talent that is Magnus Carlsen, he is still number one.
Yeah,
And
no.
there's many times where FIDE has not seen eye to eye with the chess world. Very notoriously, there's Kasparov who did not want to play with FIDE, and then FIDE had world chess champions from 1998 to 2004, I believe, that were
Yeah.
not in accordance to the absolute best in the world.
I remember that. I
Yeah,
remember reading
I think
that
it
in
was still
history.
2000, I think. Sorry, I think
Right.
it's like 1995 to 2000, something like
Yeah, there
this.
was like multiple world champions, and it was just weird in that time.
Yeah, year by year, it was different year by year, whereas it was, the other people who were not playing with FIDE, they were in like the People's International Committee of Chess. I know it's not exactly that, the wording, but these people were playing, were the best in the world. Nigel Short, Garry Kasparov, they were playing at the, they were deciding the real World Chess Championships. And to this day, that is still debated.
So I know they're not the best, but if you had to choose one between those two, who do you think is going to win?
So I said, well, it's now obviously biased because Nepo won his round two today, but I said this yesterday on my stream, so I don't get sued by whoever is hearing this right now.
right.
I said Nepo yesterday because I think he's a stronger player, though Ding has a really good ability. Ding has the ability to draw very consistent games. So if Ding has ever the leg up in this match, he has the ability to draw them till the end of the match and then win. Okay, that could be a really good strategy that he has because he's really good at doing draws. He went on a very famous unbeaten streak of 100 classical games unbeaten. So a lot of draws, a lot of wins.
Right.
And so he has that ability. But Nepo is definitely better in this stage at this world. It's his second World Chess Championship, right? So he's better under this pressure. And I think that that goes a long, long way in knowing the time control, knowing the number of games, knowing your endurance throughout all this. I think Nepo will win. And it's already 1.5 to 0.5 after day two.
I was gonna come to the podcast and sit. I've been on Ding Liren's side since the beginning, and I'm still am. I still am. I'm gonna keep that choice, even though that he lost today, with the white pieces. Out of all the pieces, he lost with the white pieces. And I've always liked Ding Liren's Catalan. That's my favorite opening. I like the Catalan. And yeah,
Very
I
good
learned the
opening.
Catalan from him. And so I don't know if Jan Nepo's gonna let him do that. Opening or not, I think he went a different style today, but it was a really bad game. It was a really bad game. But I'm still gonna go for Ding Liren. Personally speaking, and this is just my opinion, I feel like Jan Nepo already had a chance at the World Championship.
Oh,
Just personally
oh, oh.
thinking. I know. I'm just saying. And so I'm already disheartened that like Magnus Carlsen can't be on the seat facing Ding Liren, but it is what it is. But it's I was impressed on how good Jan Nepo played in the against all the other players. I forgot what that tournament is called, where they're like trying to see who's going to be a contender. What is that tournament called? It
Oh,
doesn't matter. But
the candidates.
yeah, the candidates. I was surprised at how much like he dominated the field the second time. Which is kind of surprising because of how he played like Magnus Carlsen 2 years ago. So, yeah. I can't wait to see the rest of the games. Can't wait to see.
Yeah.
You gotta treat chess like sports sometimes, man. It is what it is. All right. It is what it is. I'll be more nicer when I officially meet the guys. Like, I take my comment back on Jan Nepo. But anyway. All right. Well, this was a good episode. Did you have any? Actually, I don't know why I'm asking you. Do you have any questions? But yeah, this was a good episode. We talked about a lot of things. Hopefully, everybody that's like listening to this had a revelation on what you're supposed to do when you're improving in chess, becoming the best, or trying to just reach that one goal, probably trying to get over 1,000 Elo. Hopefully, everybody got all the tips that they need to reach it. And you can go to his social media accounts, which is, you can say your social media.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much, by the way, for having me and for the plug as well. I'm the chess nerd on Instagram. That's my oldest platform, as you guys know. But I'm also the chess nerd if you're on Twitter. If you're on TikTok, I have very fun clips on TikTok, and on Twitter, I have some funny chess moves that I show, or some cool hot takes. It's all about chess. And on YouTube, I'm the chess nerd as well. The only platform of mine that is not the chess nerd is Twitch, in which I'm the chess nerd live, because that username was already taken, the chess nerd. So we have the
That
chess
sucks.
nerd live on there.
You know what's funny is that I tried to be H1 chess on chess.com and somebody already took my
Really?
name. Yeah.
But you can request the chess.com if you're a personality, you can request your own username.
Oh, I can? Okay. I might have to
Contact
do
them, yeah.
that.
They will help with that.
All right. Yeah, somebody from the Dominican Republic. I don't. Just made his account last year. It's like, how out of all names you think of that one? Out of all names. But
You have a quarrel with that person.
yeah, you don't have any courses at all, or you have the chess boards. You don't have anything else, educational content.
So all my educational content is, as I said, the 82 tips, the 41 tips. Those are on YouTube. I don't have courses at this moment because I don't feel I wanna make courses when it's a better time, you know? And so yeah, for now everything of mine is free except for the chess boards, which they're all sold out right now. We're trying to restock a completely different model of chessboard, which is chessboard chess pieces, which is very, very exciting. And so yeah. That's pretty much it.
All right. So do you have anything else that you want to get off your chest or want to say?
Yeah. Play chess, everyone. Have fun out there. Don't be too hard on yourself when you're having a bad day. And if it really, really goes bad and you're taking it personal, then take a break from that game of chess. You know, take like a 7-day break and get back to the chessboard emotionless, where you won't, you know, go about your emotions. At the end of the day, chess shouldn't affect your mental health, and it should be a very fun and yet competitive game.
So what he's really saying is play the ballistic intercontinental gambit. What is that opening called? I forgot the full opening. Everybody, that's the only comment that I get, the first comment that I get whenever I go over a gambit. But anyway, thank you for listening. Please follow if you want this chess knowledge, chess wisdom, chess understanding, so that you can stay notified when I have my next guest on. You never know. It could be Gotham Chess one day. Just saying. Shout out to him.
That's why I'm here, you guys.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. But no, we're happy with the chess nerd to be here. It took a lot to get him on the platform, all right? by a lot, I mean, he was gracious enough to come on. So thank you for listening. And hey, I'll see you next time.